This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here, and joining me, as always, from ESPN, Courtney Cronin. What's up, Courtney?
Just enjoying another fall day in Minnesota. It's beautiful out. We've got football on tap this weekend. I'm feeling good. How about you?
This is the small sweet spot of fall where it's actually nice. And played golf the other day. I know you did as well. Just perfect, flawless, wonderful golf weather. And then it turns hellacious very soon. So enjoy it while you have some warmth and some football happening before everything in the weather gets terrible. So where do you want to start with this week? I think I'd like to begin with Vikings fans, get a grip for a second. I mean, just like I get it. I totally get it. I do. When it's the Packers, it's just worse. Everything feels worse. Your friends and neighbors across the street are probably rubbing it in your face, but they're not tanking for Trevor Lawrence or firing the coach and GM or whatever number of other crazy
Wait
things.
Wait a second.
It's not happening. It's been such a week.
You've seen people accuse them of tanking at this point?
Not accuse them, but suggesting they should.
Oh my gosh, what is wrong with people? It's 1 week. Like, I'm all aboard the panic train when it's time, but it is, even after that annihilation on Sunday, it's not time to be on the panic train yet, because there are reliable fixes to what appears to be an unfixable situation of just kind of conceding your defense is not going to be where you wanted it to be this year for a number of factors. But to suggest that the recently extended Mike Zimmer and the recently extended Rick Spielman are going to be fired, that's comical. That's funny. No one's saying this in my mentions. I'm just getting yelled at by a bunch of people who say they're not going to watch the NFL because of social justice causes.
Yeah, and if they check the TV ratings for last week, those are bots and not real people, because real people were watching a lot. But
yeah, they were.
That's another podcast. But so now that we've got that out of the way, they're not going to tank and they're not going to fire the head coach and GM after one loss to the Green Bay Packers. Holton Hill, Mike Hughes, and Cameron Dantzler are not busts yet. So I guess where we need to start is how much of this can get washed away by beating the Indianapolis Colts. If they beat the Colts, does everybody just cool down a little bit? And I'm not even saying that these criticisms are wrong of where their defense is at or the offense's struggles or is Gary Kubiak still got the fastball. I mean, there's a lot of questions to come away from week one, and a lot of them are very seriously legit. It's just that the freakout has been a little much. But what is a win against the Colts do for everyone's mind, I suppose?
Calms everybody down that you're not going to be in a situation like you were in 2018, where you get to the end of the season and say, crap, we shouldn't have tied that game in Green Bay. We shouldn't have lost to Buffalo at home. And then maybe if Kirk doesn't fumble the ball away inside the, 45-yard line against the Rams the following week, then maybe you set yourself up for a playoff run. I think these early season losses that we saw, especially 2 years ago, pile up, really played a factor into where this team was able to go and ultimately where they ended in 2018. And you just don't want the thing to snowball, because you know you have your work cut out for you on defense. You know this is going to take several games, if not a couple months, to work itself out when you have such a young secondary and a group of corners that don't just turn it on. Like, last I checked, it is very hard to play cornerback for that coach, Mike Zimmer, who apparently invented the cornerback, also, last I checked. So with all that said, you go into the season anticipating that there's going to be a massive learning curve, and without a preseason, it's harder. It's just, it's, that's the fact right there. So to get to this point now where we're sitting here after 1 week saying, oh my gosh, if they start 0-2, the playoffs are out of reach. You know, I don't completely fault fans for having that sort of mindset, because it just feels like with this stretch of quarterbacks you have in the first 5 weeks of the season, now it's Phillip Rivers, and then it's Ryan Tannehill, who was the best play-action quarterback last year on a very, very good team that now has Jadeveon Clowney part of their pass rush. And then it's Deshaun Watson and the mess of the Houston Texans team, but it's still Deshaun Watson.
Right.
And then you have Russell Wilson. So I think people look at the schedule and it's like, get a win where you can, because if you started out, you know, if you lost all five of those games, let's say worst case scenario, then everything is a mess at that point. And I don't know how you salvage anything, but you know, early season woes, it happens. But I just think in the fashion was so jarring watching that team last Sunday and its inability to generate any sort of pressure with backups playing in starters' roles, you should certainly expect that, but it's still jarring to see nonetheless.
So here's something that I've found very interesting is everyone's explanations. I will not call them excuses, but explanations for the different things.
You mean finger pointing?
Is that what we want to call it? Because it certainly felt like
it. Feels like it.
So let's just go like one by one. So there's a 4th-and-3 where Kirk Cousins makes a preposterous decision and decides to heave the ball to Tajae Sharpe. And after the game, Mike Zimmer says, well, supposed to throw it to Thielen. We look at the All-22 tape, which finally came out and everyone stopped freaking on Twitter, and should have thrown it to Adam Thielen. I mean, the safety was not rolling over the way that Cousins said he was.
Kirk had, yeah, explained it.
But okay, whatever. Like, plays happen and decisions happen.
And he's always going to trust his pre-snap read. That's what you get with Kirk Cousins. Like, let's move on from that one, because that is about as cut and dry as it's going to be.
Also, a better throw possibly gets – I mean, he had the coverage he was looking for. It was one-on-one. There's nobody else in the world around. He throws a back shoulder or something else happens, and then it's an amazing play to Tajae Sharpe, hero. So, okay, fine, all right. I didn't love that play call, but that's all right. The fact that Zimmer says after the game, well, he was supposed to throw to another guy. All right, there's a little finger pointing. Cousins shoots back with, well, the safety's rolling over that way. Okay, there's a little bit of that. We had the defensive guys saying the offense couldn't get off the field. We have the offensive guys saying the defense couldn't get off the field. We have Andre Patterson saying it was the coverage's fault for not being able to cover for more than 2.3 seconds, and Aaron Rodgers got the ball out quickly, which that's a stat I challenge, by the way, because 2 or 3 times Aaron Rodgers just caught the ball and like chucked it right to somebody. Whatever they call those plays, like shovel pass kind of things. Well, that's not really a good representation. They had plenty of opportunities to pressure Rodgers and didn't do it. It's only interesting that Andre Patterson freaked out when you asked him about it and mentioned this like 5 times. Well, he threw the ball fast. It's just like, I'm not panicking. You guys are panicking.
Yeah, no, I mean, it certainly you can read into what's going on the defensive side of the ball as they're trying to, like, you know, batten down the hatches here and hold on for dear life, because they know that this season is not playing out the way they wanted it to. And they honestly, in order to work through this reboot that they have on the back end, they needed everything to be perfect up front. Well, you don't have Danielle Hunter, at least until the Houston game. You don't have Michael Pierce, so the run defense is really going to struggle this year. And that's something that no one's talked about from the first week of the season. We're also worried about them trying to pressure Aaron Rodgers and that they don't have any interior push. Well, you know, call me when it's 2018 again and they finally have a real 3 technique, but that's neither here nor there. We're not talking about the run defense, which is, you know, kind of baffling. And Yannick Ngakoue is not up to speed. So you're not going to be able to do what you want to do with the defensive line when you're playing backups and starters roles. That's just, I mean, Andre Patterson is a terrific teacher. He likes the underdog. He wants to develop and groom these players, but you just don't have the time to do that. Yep. And to be a competitive team in the NFC if you have what you had on Sunday. So, I mean, that's kind of where at least I see the conversation going now of, is it fixable? And if it's not fixable, how do you work around that? That's at least what I was trying to get at with him when I asked about, okay, you talk about the quarterback is holding onto the ball not very long. 2.3, 2.25 seconds was what Pro Football Focus had for Aaron Rodgers. Well, Philip Rivers held onto the ball 2.27 seconds, which is not that much slower. And he has a far better offensive line without a revolving door issue of not knowing who's playing right tackle. Like, we know that the Colts have a very, very good offensive line. Historically, for the last few years, they've been very good at it. So, you know, really ever since they drafted Quentin Nelson and worked everything around the interior of the line that way. But the way that I look at the situation now is, you could have the exact same thing happen in week two that you had happen in week one, and it could potentially be worse. So how do you fix that? Is it a matter of, you know, cover, you need to cover on the back end. Okay, well, that's easier said than done when you might not even have the cornerback who played the most snaps last week playing this week because he wasn't practicing on Wednesday and Thursday. So I don't know. I understand that the pass rush and what happens on the back end, you know, rush and cover, it all goes in hand, but to me, there's got to be something there that you can deviate from, kind of like an emergency valve that you can pull when things are going as badly as they are. And I've got theories on it. I think back to the Rams game and what Zim had to do 2 years ago when the pass defense was, you know, really bottomed out. I think there's ways to fix that, but truly, if you don't get, if you're not getting pressure on the quarterback, and are you going to concede and say, okay, we'll wait till Danielle Hunter gets back, we'll wait till Unique Ngakoue is up to speed, that may be the path of least resistance. We'll find out if indeed they are, if they're able to do it better than they were last week, if it really is that Ngakoue needed another week to knock the rust off, get up to speed, okay. But I'm starting to believe that it won't be that way, and that it's going to take at least until Hunter gets back before they look, have any semblance of a pass rush.
And we have no idea when that will be. IR means at least 3 games. It doesn't mean only 3 games. So this could go on for much longer.
It could, but I don't think it will.
You think he'll come back after three games?
I think there's, you know, there's been plenty of indication from what we've seen of him at practice. He's, you know, running around just fine out there. It doesn't look like he has a too serious of a neck injury when he's on the rehab field. And people I've spoken with have continued to reiterate that this is a precautionary thing. And, you know, I could go all conspiracy theory on you and point out that his contract is awful and that
maybe are you into that? I've had many people ask.
You know, I'm not going to go full Zilgaddy in here, but like, I definitely think there is reason to believe that Danielle Hunter should not and is not in any rush to get back until something gets figured out. Because why risk when you're making 14.4 on average a year? You are like the 8th highest paid when you should be in the top 5 of defensive ends, just based on the average salaries. 5-year, $72 million contract he signed when he was 23. You know, they should probably be trying to look to restructure you right now before you get back. Because if I'm him, why would I risk injury when I'm already maybe dealing with something? I mean, clearly it's a neck injury. You know, we haven't heard the team say anything, but that's what my sources tell me. So why would you rush back from that when your contract sucks? It's your fault. You signed the contract, but his contract's not great. And you're also dealing with a tweak. Like, you know, slow play this until you get it to where you're comfortable playing out there and you're comfortable with the contract. So we'll see.
Well, I think the Vikings could actually do this and not have it hurt them a whole lot because they are set to pay $17 million on the cap to him next year anyway. So this would have been always a time to rework a deal or extend a deal and so forth. And with him, you can extend him 10 years and feel good about it, considering the position he plays, the age curve for the position he plays, what he's produced. I mean, I'm not saying literally 10 years, but if you said...
He'll be 35. He'll literally be at the end of his career, Viking for life. Why not?
He's so young that if you gave him a 10-year extension, it would be fine. So they should do that. I've never quite gotten around to the conspiracy theory. I do think it's smart of him to take his time to look at this defense and look at this team and say, it's very hard to convince me at this moment. This could change in like 3 weeks, but at this moment and heading into the season, it's hard to convince me that this team desperately needs me back to chase the Super Bowl at this point in where they are. So I should take my time and get back with this neck injury. The other thing is too, that other pass rushers throughout their careers have started out hot and had injuries that add up pretty early on. And then you see a fall off later on in their career. And if you're Hunter, you don't want to rush yourself back, re-injure the neck, and then go forward. But you know, I guess I only put it at a very small percentage of me buying into the contract being what it's all about.
Yeah.
Could it be a small portion of it? Yeah, possibly, or some percentage of it.
That's where I'm at. That's why I'm not full Zilgadian, like I said. I won't go full Judd craziness on that. But he and I have talked about it, and I absolutely adore his theory because I can totally buy into it. But no, I think it certainly plays into some of it. It's not all of it, but like you said, and like you and I have talked about since the draft, this team is built for 2021. If you win this year, it's gravy. It's all extra if you win this year, but you are really truly set up for expectations to be at their peak in 2021. So for a defense, you know, is going to have a lot of up and downs, especially within this first quarter of the season. Why rush back when it really may not matter? And I hate to say it like that, but it's like, if it's not going to be make or break a complete difference when your defensive line has already taken multiple hits this year by not getting Griffin back, by having Michael Pierce opt out, by not having a true three technique, and now Hunter, like, you're just not going to be able to do what you want up front. And it's you can't replicate it.
Real quick, did I ask you this before? Do you think Michael Pierce regrets it, the fact that there has not been any coronavirus outbreaks?
No. And I spoke with him. I spoke with him at length for a story that I wrote in the middle of training camp. And, you know, what he and I talked about, and this is just why I think the whole Kirk Cousins thing of just was so crass when he says, if I die, I die. Well, Michael Pierce was very concerned about ending up in the hospital because he had pneumonia during the 2017 season with the Ravens. And that's just something that, I mean, you know, he's in the 340 range right now. That is his body. He is a massive human being, and his lungs don't work the way that yours do, mine do, or anybody else's. And I think that for him, it's a rather safe than sorry situation. I did not sense an ounce of regret in his voice when I talked to him in August, which is a couple weeks removed from the decision initially. And I don't think he should, because truly we're 1 week past this. Yes, the numbers for coronavirus and what we've seen coming out of the first week of the season, it's not like, okay, one team lost their entire offensive line because everybody got COVID. Like, knock on wood, it's great. I'm thrilled with the way the NFL has handled this so far. I hope we can keep this going, but I'm not holding my breath more than a week at a time. I don't think anybody should.
Right. Yeah. Good point. And if you're Pierce, you only could know what you knew at the time, which was there will be protocols, but there's certainly no guarantees. You didn't know it would go this well. I just wonder if the NFL should have offered a certain date for players to opt back in, but then there's salary cap implications and things like that that would make that potentially very difficult, even for a team like the Vikings, who spent the cap space. I want to circle back to on the field and Yannick Ngakoue, because when I was running down all the excuses / explanations for what happened, I forgot Yannick Ngakoue talking about how it's not an excuse, but it's not an excuse three different times for him not being fully up to speed. Now, I actually am buying this one from Yannick Ngakoue, because looking at his recent history, I couldn't find too many games where he only had one pressure. I think it was only the third time in the last 3 years he's had one or zero, that he's always had at least two or more pressures in every game. So I think that he will get significantly better. However, this week you're facing really good offensive linemen, and I'm not sure, and a quarterback who gets rid of the ball quick, I'm not sure how much he's going to impact this week either.
Yeah, I mean, he and Anthony Costanzo, like I asked him about, like, they have a history. And I mean, it was a little surprising that they did keep him on David Bakhtiari that long, considering he played, I think it was like 40-something of the 72 snaps that the Packers were on the field, Ngakoue, that is, when he was on defense. They didn't take him off him until I think it was somewhere in like the third quarter. So that was a little surprising. But, you know, it was an expedited process. The guy had 9 days to learn a defense, and he's playing standing – you know, he played standing up last year and in Jacksonville. Like, he's playing in a 3-point stance. I mean, it's different now. So I don't know. Dre didn't want to call it rust. Yannick called it rust. I think it's just, I haven't played football for 8 months. Like, by the time he got to practice that last week of August before cutdown day, this was to be expected. But how much better can you really anticipate the defensive line being? I mean, you can't rely on one player. Like, that was the whole thing to bring him in the first place. if Danielle Hunter was healthy, they knew Danielle was going to get chipped. He was going to get double teamed. They're going to put a tight end on him. Like, it was just going to be hard for him to generate any sort of pass rush on his own. You'd anticipate they see the best rushers lined up against the left tackle. We're going to put a tight end over there too. We're going to dedicate extra attention. We're going to put our running back over there, Jonathan Taylor and pass pro. Like, that's at least what I would anticipate. As far as, like, you know, the extra attention that's going to go in Ngakoue's way. I just don't think that this defensive line, given what the scheme is, what their rush plan is from week to week, and what we saw for, you know, historically the last few years, that one player can do it alone. Danielle Hunter's special. He has generated a lot of work on his own, but, you know, when he and Everson Griffin were, you know, on the field together, they were a fantastic tandem. Mm-hmm. That's not something I think a player who's brand new in your defense, like, all of a sudden you expect him to turn it on and be great after a week. It's not realistic to me.
Want to remind you to go to sodastick.com to get your original Minnesota sports inspired goods. They just launched their official collaboration with Bud Grant. Yes, Bud Grant. You can now get your official Bud Grant shirt and Man Cave art print. If you haven't seen it yet, you have to check it out. And we're going to hook you up with free shipping for your order. Use code PURPLEINSIDER for free shipping. That is SodaStick, SOTASTICK.com. Original Minnesota sports-inspired goods. Code PURPLEINSIDER for free shipping. We'll get back to the conversation in just a second, but first, this football season will be very different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Yeah, it was a little weird outside US Bank Stadium not to see people tailgating, but that means you've got plenty of opportunities to watch the game from home and enjoy a crazy, because you know it will be crazy, Vikings season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. This passionate fan group are the ones who are the real generational talents that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi is not made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching.
Right. And he's much more of a guy who impacts one or two plays a game, but it's a huge impact. And that's where you notice him rather than
You don't get run help from him. So what's that going to mean this week?
It is interesting to me.
Eric Kendricks got to be like exhausted from the last week and what's projected for him this season without having Linville in front of him.
And I think that Indy is going to run a lot. But I just pulled this up. Ngakoue had 30 rushes off the left side and 13 off the right side. So they did put him over the right tackle a little more than they did over the left tackle. And he had zero success against David Bakhtiari going up against.
But it took him until the third quarter to do that.
Right. So that was his usage was a little bit interesting, and I would expect much better from him. But I agree with you that he's just not the guy who is going to carry your entire defensive line. My question off of this is, okay, you know, when Hunter comes back, he's good at football. You know that Ngakoue is good at football. But the rest of these guys, you do have to start asking the questions, I guess. Like, what did you see that made you want to hang on to some of these players? And if they don't improve, we're going to be going, well, what was it? Why? And Jalen Holmes is a great example. I mean, Jalen Holmes played 30 snaps, had zero pressures, is one of the lowest graded players by PFF, in 3 years has shown nothing for them. I mean, Jaleel Johnson has barely worked his way into games in the past, played 57 snaps, again, one of their lowest graded players. Hercules Mataafa remains on this football team. What's your favorite Hercules Mataafa memory? I mean, is it nothing? I can't believe it that he's still out there on the football field. At some point, it'll probably be this week, he'll get a strip sack and run it for a touchdown and dunk it in my face. But what in the world is this guy playing for, is my question. Was there no one better in the world than Hercules Mataafa at this job?
You know, I tend to think that these are the project type players that Andre Patterson wants to see through. You know, for me, if the guy's not Aaron Donald, I don't want him. If I'm a coach, like, I had this conversation with somebody earlier, I would be the worst person in a personnel department. I'd be like, if he's not perfect, get him the hell out of here. I don't want him on my team. So essentially I'm Mike Zimmer. But you know, it's just, that's the hand that they're dealt by their own choices. Like, if they would have spent differently, they would have had the money in free agency to go after a three technique. I'd have to go back and look to see who was available, but you know, if they spent differently, maybe they go get a Jadeveon Clowney and far earlier than they got Yannick Ngakoue. Maybe they're able to, in 2019, get a three technique. Maybe they're able to retain Sheldon Richardson. I don't know. Like, I just think that the way that the interior has panned out, where you have Shamar Stephan kind of on this last ditch effort, you're just trying to move him around and make it make sense. And then on top of that, you still don't have a great push. Like, I think it just comes down to decision-making. It just doesn't make sense to me, because you've spent so much money on your edge presence, and you're a team that wants to win with four. Like, that is, you know, typically what Mike Zimmer wants. He's not drawing up exotic blitzes. I know Frank Reich said he is. I don't consider the double A-gap blitz exotic anymore. Like, I just don't. So, I mean, I think that the pressure that they're able to generate off of the quarterback has never been something that has come from the interior of that defensive line routinely. So you're now in a situation where it's like, you have all these projects. You have a Jalen Holmes. Well, what is he? Well, he was a defensive end in college and we moved him inside because he's got to wait his turn before he becomes a defensive end. What? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then you have, you know, what are you doing with Armon Watts? I think eventually that one will work itself out. What are you doing with Hercules Mata'afa?
I think Watts actually has the potential to be good. But the Mata'afa thing, you...
Doesn't make sense to me.
You used this one line once, and it went over my head, a Mean Girls. But, like, stop trying to make Mata'afa happen. So maybe it's part of the domino effect of Hunter being out, is that you can't use Afadi Adenabo in this type of role, so you have to use... Mata'afa. My question is, every year when they go to the draft and then UDFAs, and they tell us about how, well, you see, that one time we got Danielle Hunter. Remember that? Remember Danielle Hunter and how good he was? Like, yeah, okay. Have you done it with anyone else? I mean, Stephen Weatherly was pretty good, and he got a contract in Carolina. Happy for him. Nice guy. Not really a significant player on a team. You have Adenabo, had a nice year last year, still not really sure he can play. And these other guys have not shown anything. And what they needed this year, and we'll see if this happens at some point, and I don't know, issue an apology if it does. But we needed to see, in order for them to have a successful defensive line, development. We needed to see guys rise to the opportunity, and that was going to be what swung this defense. If someone rises to the opportunity and all of a sudden Mata'afa becomes this great, you know, situational rusher and gets eight sacks, okay, wow, look, the new Tom Johnson. But it just doesn't look like it's happening with any of these guys. They don't look any better than they've looked since they got here.
Well, what do you think then about that brings up a point, because, like, when you think about Mata'afa and you think about back before training camp started, I didn't even have him on the team because I thought James Lynch was going to rise up and take that role. And obviously it showed you what a truncated offseason does to guys learning how to play NFL football. The development, the learning curve is steep. But is James Lynch just going to be another Hercules-esque type player where he's cleaner and he's not fully one thing or the other? What about DJ Wanham? Is he really Danielle Hunter light? Like, you know, I look at these fourth round draft picks, and yes, maybe I'm overreacting because it is still early in the season. And neither of them have played. And it's, you know, a situation now where you're just wondering, okay, are they going to pan out? What is their development? What does their learning curve look like? Is it just going to be history repeating itself like we have with a Jalen Holmes, with a Hercules Mata'afa, with a Jahleel Johnson, with all these guys that they've brought in who are really never more than rotational players? And yeah, you can have a rotation. You should have a rotation, but it shouldn't be like, that shouldn't be what you deviate to all the time. That should be like a kind of in a pinch or if you really need it.
I think that what the salary cap has done to them, because they run it right up to the very edge and they spend a lot of money to make sure they keep everyone, which I don't think we've even talked about Dalvin Cook's contract since like the emergency podcast. You know, when you run it right up to the very edge by paying absolutely everyone and you have a big quarterback contract, it does not allow you for wiggle room to bring in veterans who can make an impact, who are average players. Because what you have, imagine that they got some situational rusher who's an average player. Let's say like Vinny Curry. Remember him for the Eagles? Mm-hmm. All right, there's just an average guy who gets a good amount of pressures for the job that you give him. Great, average player. Well, that's a lot better than someone who like doesn't belong in the NFL, who's not going to get a second contract in the entire NFL, which that's the way that Jalen Holmes is trending at this moment, is that after this is it, that'll probably be the end of Jalen Holmes, unless he takes some huge steps forward that we just don't see coming. But the gap between someone who's going to be out of the league after their rookie deal and someone who is a proven veteran who's done it at an average or above average level is the same difference between average and superstar. It's a massive difference in terms of the impact. And I think that they've taken a lot of swings thinking, oh, well, we like what we see with this late round pick. We like what we see with this UDFA. The reality is most of those things fail. It doesn't matter how good you are at coaching. If Phil Jackson has bad players on the Chicago Bulls, we don't know him as the greatest coach, right? So I think the same thing with Andre Patterson. I believe he is a marvelous coach and he really connects with players and he knows all the techniques to teach them and how to teach them and all those things. But if you don't have the NFL talent, you're just not going to get anywhere with this. So I think that if they had regrets here on the D-line, it's the situational veteran who costs you $2 million who they have not been able to afford at a couple of different positions. I think that that's where it really hurts. Now, once one guy gets hurt, we've seen this since they signed Cousins. If one guy goes down, then there's a big domino effect and it impacts a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah. And that's just kind of why, at least in my mind, when you're playing backups and starters roles, this is what you should expect.
Yep, like, I agree.
It's almost kind of arrogant to think that it's going to be better than this and that you can look at one player, i.e. a unique Ngakoue, and say, hey, Danielle Hunter's out. Go make magic happen. Go make a pass rush by yourself. Like, make the whole thing by yourself. It's all on you. Like, that's why I think when he said on Wednesday that, you know, he doesn't feel any added pressure because, you know, they're two different styles of rushers, two different styles of players, in that, you know, it's not about filling a role. Like, he was brought in here thinking it's going to be a tandem, and it is. So I don't think you should take that extra pressure to be like, I'm going to dominate Phillip Rivers by myself. I'm going to sack him 6.5 times like I did over the first 8 games I played against the Colts. That's just not going to happen. So kind of this is the hand that you dealt to yourself. So the results being different, I don't think you should anticipate anything other than maybe a marginal difference that they look a little bit better this week after knocking off the rust, you know, team-wide in week one. But also, you know, being in a situation where you're exposed on the back end regardless. You have young corners. You're probably going to not have Cameron Dantzler out there if this injury to his rib holds up and he doesn't play in week two. It's going to look bad because it's just a bad situation to start from the start. Like, you can't make chicken bleep out of like chickens. You know what I'm trying to say here? Like,
yes,
it's like you have stars on the defense. They should be able to elevate those around them. You can't, if you don't have stars in a certain position group though, you're not going to have like, you just can't. And I don't know, the injuries itself are seriously hurting this team and the personnel changes that they've made across the board that's going to be the storyline of the season.
So let me ask you this. Can Kirk Cousins overcome this? Because the last times he had this, and it is times of where he didn't have a good defense when he was in Washington, he put up a lot of stats and got his teams to 9-7, 7-9 in that ballpark. But that was, you know, kind of where he formed that reputation of being down by 20 points and then putting up a bunch of statistics and so forth and not being able to get you over the hump. There isn't a whole lot in his history that says without a defense giving him a lot of bites at the apple on offense that he's going to be able to overcome it. We didn't see a whole lot of the weapons that we thought we would with Justin Jefferson and Irv Smith. But also, I feel like I got 0% sample size on the offense. We got one scripted drive, disaster strikes a couple of times, and then all of a sudden, you're playing out of the shotgun, which is not their offense, throwing it down the field to Thielen, which is not their offense against the prevent defense. So I don't have any sense for what this offense is going to look like going forward because I just don't think we saw it. They got behind so quickly in that game against the Packers and never had the ball.
That's what I wrote my, that was like my follow on Monday of, you know, time ran out on the offense to show what they can be like without Stephon Diggs. But I do think that there's some trends there, unfortunately, for this offense that are just going to continue to repeat itself. Like, remember when Kyle Rudolph was like passive aggressively talking about Kirk Cousins in 18 about like how he wouldn't throw him open and that, you know, Kirk's got to like trust you to like the nth degree. He's got to have your social security number, your birth certificate, any sort of identifying document about you. And then you'll get the ball thrown to you as long as he has that sort of security. What did we see on that Tajay Sharp play? He trusted his pre-snap read more than he did his Pro Bowl receiver who's been to more Pro Bowls than he has. Like, that's not a trend I think that's going to change. Like, Kirk is into his 30s. Like, that is who he is as a quarterback. And when you don't have the established veteran playmaker opposite Thielen, you're probably looking at Thielen trying to, like, get back to where he was in 2018 or at least, you know, compete with that trend of 8 games of 100 yards receiving. But that's strictly – that's not even a good thing. That's not a necessity because that's all Kirk Cousins knows. BC Johnson is still a little bit of an unknown. Justin Jefferson is a total unknown, and he's a slot receiver so far in this offense. So, you know, what we saw from the offense in week one was so limited that I'll give them the benefit of the doubt of a do-over because, yeah, Dalvin Cook had 2 rushing touchdowns and he looked okay, but, you know, just like Kirk's 19 for 25 stat line, it all came in garbage time. Like that is a quintessential Kirk Cousins stat line that makes you believe, unless you looked at the all 22 or if you just watched the game, period. Oh, or if you could read a box score to realize like it was not competitive whatsoever. The score was not indicative at all of how badly the whole team played. But this is an offense. If the defense is going to play this way, this offense needs to score a ton of points. I don't think it's going to happen because they're not going to be able to, on a routine basis, bail out this defense. As much as the tides have shifted in Minnesota, and it's certainly with the spending, with, you know, the outlook of the team, even you go back to like Kevin Stefanski last year and just how much of a focal point he became within this offense, and the defense kind of took a back seat. That's just, you can have all the optics you want, but it's not going to be enough to hold up this team when it really matters.
If Stephon Diggs was still here and Adam Thielen was healthy, would you feel differently about that? Would you feel they could keep up? I would too. In 2016, he did it with Washington. They had great weapons all over the field. He had a good season and they went, I think, 9-7, which this year would be enough to get you in the playoffs. But without Diggs, like you said, there's so many more questions. There isn't, Thielen is really excellent. Diggs is a guy who, I mean, last year won games by himself. Philadelphia, the one that comes to mind right away, Denver too. Yeah. It's just like he took over with those deep plays. I don't know if we're going to see that from Thielen, especially without anybody else out there.
Thielen needs a guy to clear out for him and to be the, you know, the deep ball threat, the straight line speed guy. I think that could be Justin Jefferson, but how long is that going to take? Because, even Kubiak has mentioned, like, you know, he's going to be a big part of this offense. He's not committing to saying, yeah, Justin Jefferson's going to be getting 5-6 targets a game. I mean, he only had 3 balls thrown his way and he caught 2 of them. That's a rookie stat line. And that is a stat line of what you would expect in an offense that doesn't use a lot of 3 receiver sets. So it's like, he's already kind of got 2 things going against him from the jump. And now going into this early part of the season, his usage is going to be tapered. Like same thing too. I mean, aren't we all expecting Irv Smith to have this unbelievably massive breakout season?
Yes.
I tell people to kind of cool their jets on that. I get that fantasy question all the time. How many targets should we expect from him? This, that, and the other thing. He had 1 in week 1. And, you know, is that a sign of things to come? I honestly think for now it is. I think, you know, cool it for a little bit. Because think about what it was last year. He didn't get going truly until Thielen went down. Now, you can't anticipate an injury. You wouldn't want to. But that was at the halfway point of the season before they started figuring out that their tight ends could catch passes.
Get back to the conversation in just a second. But even though sports took a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving. And that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number 1 job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts at all. Plus, Indeed provides you with powerful tools to make your search even easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire, and with 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire that you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates that you will see fast. Try Indeed with free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer anytime, available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Right.
So, I mean,
I was going strongly the other way. I was going leading into this, like, Irv Smith's going to catch 5, 6, 7 passes a game. And I still, because there's so little to take away from a situation where they had to play shotgun most of the game. Think about this for a ratio. They were like 60-40 shotgun on last Sunday. Last year, it was more like 70-30 not shotgun. So I still think that that's going to happen. The question is, with a tight end, even as good as he could be, does that offer you the same threat as having a Thielen and Diggs? And the answer is no. I mean, it's just not as dangerous when it comes to the big plays. And so it's not like when they had Garcon and DeSean Jackson with Kirk and then two very good tight ends and a running back out of the backfield. But at the same time,
and a great offensive line too. Like, don't forget how good the offensive line was.
Yes. Yes.
15, 16.
I think,
just to mention, just to jump in real quick. So, like, you mentioned how often they were out of the shotgun, and that's just not this offense.
Right.
The one thing I'll be watching, or one of the many things this week, is just the play action usage was a trend that was just kind of really bizarre. And yes, I know they had 18 minutes and 44 seconds to, you know, pull it together and get this thing going, and they didn't. But when they had the opportunity to either, you know, we talk about the safety, that was a play action. Technically, that was an attempt because, and he sold it really well because Jair Alexander thought it was a run.
Right.
Sometimes it's just, you know, guy is not, you know, not doing what they're supposed to, and somehow it works out. Must be nice. But, you know, that's got to be the staple of his game. And that was just so bizarre that it wasn't. Like, he had one successful play action pass, which was that 37-yard touchdown to Thielen in garbage time. You have to do what Kirk Cousins is good at. You can't deviate from the plan, because if you do, you're just setting yourself up for failure. And that's kind of, at least just from like a play calling perspective, I think something that Gary Kubiak would want back.
Yeah. And I asked Gary about the play calling, and he wasn't really taking the bait, I guess, because I was sort of hinting, and maybe he knew because he's Gary and he's a wily and stuff. But I was like, you know, when you make a bad play call, like, does that sit with you a while? And he's like, no, I just get over it. And I'm like, okay, but, you know, 4th and 3, what was the deal? Or the play action in the end zone, the safety. The play action usage, though, to completely bail on it. I mean, what we forget after looking at the final score is that the Vikings had the ball down, 22-10. That is not at all a devastating situation. I mean, down by 12 in the middle of the third quarter, you can come back from that at home for sure. And to kind of bail on the play action then was weird. And I wonder if they got spooked a little, because last year the Packers blew up some play actions, then they blow one up at the goal line, and then it's like, uh-oh, they've kind of got the answer. They don't care about our run. They're just going to attack Kirk, so now we got to back away from this. And then you wonder, will other teams start to do the same thing because they know what's coming? And the one thing I would say, I got this question for the Friday mailbag, and I don't want to really go there after 1 week, but somebody asked if Coops is washed. I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, no.
Come on,
Gary.
Come on, it's like, Gary.
I'm going to give you the Gary disappointment shrug.
Come on.
For even mentioning that question. Let's that see. Breaks my heart.
Here's what I'd say, though. Stefanski last year, just like Shurmur in 2017, was on fire. A lot of things that he dialed up worked. And from year to year, with different play callers, not something that you can always count on. And that the safety is a good example. Like, it might have been a great play call. The guys were wide open, but it didn't work out. So,
and that's the thing, you're going to constantly, if it's boom or bust, like if that play, if they clear out and Conklin catches that ball and they're, you know, somewhere within the 20 yard line, their own 20, and they're going to be able to either punt or get the hell out of their own like red zone, then we're saying that's great. Like we're not second guessing anything, but it was the execution of it. And, you know, it just, it was a broken play from the start. Like, I think from both sides, I mean, Jaire Alexander thought it was a run. He got lucky. He literally got lucky. That shows you how good Kirk is at selling play action. That's it. Like really. And then Mike Zimmer hinted that somebody didn't do their job. Well, you could probably assume it's Dalvin Cook. I still think that would be asking a lot for him to break off of what he was doing in helping Dakota Dozier and just, you know, pick up Alexander and pass pro on 0.3 seconds notice. Not going to happen. So I don't know. I think about that play call. I mean, it's not keeping me up at night or anything, but it's something that you just wonder, how does that stuff happen? And if it works out differently, we're not talking about it, but is the execution of the quarterback in other circumstances, the 4th-and-3 play, the, you know, at other points throughout that game, can the play calling bail Kirk out? It has to at points this year. And it just, I mean, I wouldn't say it didn't. I mean, they ran out of time for it to bail Kirk out or to at least set him up at a point where he'd be comfortable.
It's just a point about how play calling year in and year out can be great for you or not as great for you. And sometimes it's not even about the person who's calling the plays. It's just about how the cookie crumbles. And I'll give you an example. So I did an article with Cousins about his very first start when he was in Washington. And he mentioned throwing a touchdown on a backside post. Now, last year, they threw two touchdowns on backside posts. Everyone will remember them. Denver and then against Detroit when Thielen got hurt. So big plays in the season. But he said that those are the only three times in his whole career he's hit that particular route for a touchdown. It just worked last year. And so you might not get those looks this year from the opponents that you face, or maybe you will. We don't know because we have such a small sample and it's freaking week one, which kind of brings me all the way back to, as much as this has been the panicky podcast that maybe when I started out, I said it shouldn't be, but I think it's time for a pie chart to pick the game for you.
Okay.
Here's how we're going to do this.
Paper right next to me. Let me draw my circle.
All right. Here's your four options.
Circle's drawn. All right.
This game is a shootout with the Colts winning, a shootout with the Vikings winning, or a blowout with the Colts winning, or a blowout with the Vikings winning. The one option I'm not even bothering to include is a low score 9-7 victory. Cause A, who cares about those games? And B, I just can't see it with these two good offenses and bad defenses. So pie chart me.
All right. So 25. Good. I got the pie chart music.
It's a pie chart. Draw it in a circle. 100% pie chart. Okay. Are you you ready?
Yeah. Give me 1 second. I think
you got to hum the song if you want more time.
No, you hum it for me. This is your podcast.
It is. Yeah, it's a good point.
You're the production crew.
How long does it take? You got four options. All right, time's up.
Okay. I've got it. Like, God, give me time. I'm not good at math. Everyone who listens to this podcast this knows I'm terrible with numbers. God,
that's
I'm terrible
the
with
reason.
Numbers. I'm making, just give me a second. I'm making sure it adds up to 100.
Well, I mean, it's more fun when it does.
It added up to 90. Christ. Okay. All right. I got it. This is very hard. I don't like being put on the spot, especially when it comes to math.
See, you know what?
I used to come home and cry in like third grade because kids would make fun of me. Like, especially my third grade math class, they were just so mean because these math boxes we used to do were so difficult, and my mom was a math major and I didn't get the gene, clearly, as you could tell with the pie charts. So I like stats, because stats are not math, stats are stats. And I know that Eric Eager would be like, Courtney, what the hell just came out of your mouth? But
I think he's a PhD in math, but carry on. I'm not going to stop this train wherever it's going.
Just give me some time. It takes me time to put things together when it comes to math. Okay. I've got my pie chart.
Okay. Let's hear it.
All right. So shootout with the Colts winning. I put that at a 35% chance. I think that Philip Rivers, if he can cut down on the wild turnovers and if he's getting the ball out in 2.27 seconds again, they're not going to have a pass rush because Andre Patterson told us it's impossible. So I'm just going off of that. So 35% chance it says the Colts are going to win in a shootout. Okay. And they're at home. Not that home field advantage.
I love how you never make this easy on yourself. You always throw in those 5%ers that get you a little bit thrown off. Okay, so
don't worry, it adds up to 100. It adds up to 100. All right.
Vikings in a shootout.
Vikings in a shootout will be a 30% chance of a win because you bounce. If we actually see the offense have a better time of possession, if the defense doesn't, put them in a situation where they're on the field for less than, 19 minutes. There's some stat I had from last year that they're like a perfect 8-0 when they have at least 30 minutes of time of possession. And, beyond that, they just need time to work. Kirk needs time to make things happen. He needs extra chances. So if they can do that, they'll 30% chance that they win in a shootout. The next one was a blowout and the Colts being the benefactors of the blowout.
Yep.
The blowout happened to them. I put that at a 10% chance. I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't. Not with this defense that the Vikings have. And then the 25% chance would be the Vikings lose in a blowout. That seems more realistic to me.
Okay. So you're saying, all right, so there's only 10% chance that the Vikings blow out the Colts. That right.
Yeah. So that the Colts would lose in a blowout.
Okay.
And that's how I went off of it.
Right. Okay. And then what was the Vikings losing a blowout again?
25%.
25%. Okay.
Adds up to 100.
As much consternation came with that. It's a very solid pie chart. And the only thing I would tweak. Notice I threw that in a little tweak, is just like my neck. I would tweak the how thick do I have to lay this on before you get the tweak reference? So
I already got it. I was not laughing. I was trying to let you talk.
Okay.
It's your podcast. I'm not going to take it over.
I just expected a little acknowledgement of the, anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm still recovering from this pie chart.
So I would change just that. I think there's a slightly better chance that the Vikings win a shootout, and that's how I'm picking it. I'm going to pick it, 35-31 Vikings, I think, is the way that I'm going to go. I think it's going to be fun and exciting, and I think that they come out on top, and then everybody can sort of hold on to the freak out for a week at least. That's how I'm going to put it. But I also think close to equal chance that they lose in that fashion.
I have them losing in a close game. My prediction that I filed this morning at ESPN.com was 28-24 Colts. I think the Vikings were 3-point underdogs in that, and they're playing inside again. So we don't have to worry about kicking. So I wasn't even thinking there's going to be some last second field goal or anything like that. But the turnovers for Philip Rivers do concern me if I'm thinking about this from a betting perspective.
Yep.
I'm thinking about it from, okay, well, what's going to happen? But that's stuff that the Vikings can capitalize on to keep the game close. So I still think that this pass rush, and I still think that they're going to have issues on defense. I really do. For the first few weeks of the season until Danielle Hunter gets back, and I'll be happy to eat my words if it doesn't happen this way this weekend. But I flipped my pick on this show last week with the Packers because of Danielle Hunter being out. Yep. Originally, I had times you made me pick the schedule over the last 6 months?
And this is why we do it, because things change. And trust me, after this game, you'll be doing it again.
Oh, sure. And, underrated point here that nobody asked Gary about today or anything, but it's like, we know that Pat Elflein is on injured reserve, which, whatever, it might be the best place for him because he was not very good in week one. And that's, I just think this experiment's over. I think that it's time to move on. And he apparently got injured in practice on Thursday. So what does that mean? It means Drew Samia is playing. And Drew Samia, I thought, was supposed to be the one who won the right guard job, considering how much they, you know, bloviated about him this offseason. But that also brings up the fact of the matter, Ezra Cleveland didn't even dress last week.
Yep.
Is he ready to be a backup? Like, is he ready to be a backup, period? Like, that's a concerning territory to be in, that if somebody else goes down, if you do keep Dozier at left guard and you can now have Samia at right guard, is Cleveland's development so backwards because you had him play at left guard when he probably should have been playing at left tackle, and he probably could have moved on from Riley Reiff if maybe it would have panned out differently? I don't know. But it's a weird spot to be in with the offensive line too. That's just one thing that, you know, keep your eye on, like, who's going to be in it. If he's inactive again, then I think that that's a pretty telling sign that not good that your second round pick is inactive.
Yes. The Samia thing will be interesting to go back and watch after the game and get a look at how he performed. And then, of course, we're going to wonder, like, why did you – maybe, if he plays well, we're going to wonder, why did you have Elfline there to begin with? And will we ever see Elfline again? I suspect not if Drew Samia is good. So there wasn't really time for a real competition, but at the same time, did we ever think it was going to work to move Elfline to his third position in 3 years? Probably not. So, well, this was epic and lots of fun. And, this is going to be super weird. You and I not traveling to Indianapolis because there's no point with COVID at putting ourselves at risk to travel for no extra access. So this will be like preseason. It'll be old times again.
I know. I'm excited to do the game recap pod on Sunday. I think that that'll be a lot of fun. It's just, I haven't covered a game off of TV, like a true game, because preseason, we're just chilling. Like, yeah, I mean, usually. And this time, I haven't covered a game off of TV since the Browns game in 2017 when they
right.
went to London,
right.
which is wild. So hopefully my coverage is not awful. it's such a weird thing, but you know, I think back to Sunday and how almost like I felt like my mental checklist, and of course, like, you're rusty because it's your first game, and especially you didn't have any preseason games, that's to be expected. But the way that I felt leaving there, I was like, did I miss stuff? And like, when I watched back the game film, you know, the broadcast that night, I DVR'd it, I was like, oh man, Tajay Sharpe. Well, I mean, I realized it in game, and I'm like, man, that was a really bad read, like live read for Kirk Cousins. And you realize little things here and there about yes. like how long Ngakoue was on David Bakhtiari, and you know, just how quickly Rodgers was getting the ball out. It was very hard for me to pick all that stuff up in the stadium because the environment honestly felt like you were kind of just in this. It felt like you were in like a shopping mall.
Yeah,
the ambient noise. The ambient noise, it just like went, you were in a bowl and it just went up to the ceiling because it travels. And I honestly hope that, you know, it's going to sound different when we watch the game off of TV. I don't like that it's not an accurate representation of what's going on in the yep. stadium. I hope that the NFL is going to be willing to change that at some point this year. But I honestly don't know how that's going to work because the noise level was just gross. It was just so like, it literally felt like elevator music.
Yeah, it was right. It was bad. I equated it to being in your house and someone drives by with their windows open playing music. It's like, it's slight, you go like, oh, is someone driving by? And then that's about it. 2,500 fans, we'll see how much noise they create. My guess is it doesn't make a huge difference. So, all right. Well, looking forward to it. We're going to pod after the game too. So that will be fun as well. We'll have lots of coverage and, all right, panic season already. Let's go.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every possible change to win this season. From game spreads to totals to team and player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, championships, all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.